At this time, we'd like to welcome our speaker, Dana H., Friday night, How It Works Group, Columbus, New Jersey. Dana, thanks for coming.
Wow. I feel like I'm at a concert or something. Yeah, I used to hang out back there, though. Yeah. I think I was doing a little more than smoking back then. Hi, everyone. My name is Dana, and I am an alcoholic.
Dana.
Hi. I'm a little shaken. We had anticipated our trip taking about an hour and a half, and it actually took us close to four. And so we just made it here in time, and we had a little – I took my poor sponsor on a little bit of a jag through the Quakertown area, just like, you know, driving all over and – cutting across the road because we had to pee. So, yes, I know I'm being taped. So, anyway, so I said my name's Dana. My home group is in Columbus, New Jersey. It's a speaker meeting similar to this one. The last time I had a drink was on December 13th, 1996. I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and she has a sponsor. And I am so completely grateful to have this program in my life today. And I'm not going to talk a long time about what it was like. I think we've all had some experiences hearing some really fabulous war stories, and I think mine's pretty fabulous too. But I've had the privilege of hearing so many, and that part of my story doesn't necessarily make me an alcoholic. You know, I think about my childhood, and when I came into AA, I thought that my upbringing and my childhood was a major reason that I drank. And I'm sure many of you have heard the saying, if you had the kind of life that I had, you would have drank too. And I was born unto a very young mother and father, although he left when I was about a year. Never met him to this day. She went on and married again, and then she married again, and I was in different schools and having difficult time adjusting, and, you know, I was just so self-absorbed at such a young age, and I was terribly insecure. I can remember being a very young child and wanting my mom to like me. And now that I've been blessed as a parent, I mean, I can't even imagine my child thinking that. But that's how I was. You know, was I born that way? I don't know. You know, but that's how I was. And that's how I perceived the world. And the more I grew up, or at least in terms of age, the more insecure I became. And you know, childhood was, I think, rough for most of us. Every time I hear a story, you know, kids are pick on you and all that other stuff. And I, you know, I took all that really to heart, and I had a very, very hard time. And one of the first times that I came out of my shell was when I had alcohol in my system. And for the first time in my life, I felt cool. And I had friends on Monday at school, and I thought I had arrived. Does that make me an alcoholic? You know, at that point in my life, I had no idea. I would experiment and do anything that the group around me was doing because I needed to feel like I was accepted and cool, or whatever it was, whatever my issue du jour was. And I guess by the time I was in high school, I had had some situations happen to me that I absolutely could not deal with. And I had gotten to a point in my life where I had thought to myself that I absolutely cannot take any more stuff. And I think that's the first time in my life that I truly drank alcoholically. I buried my stepfather one day, and that night I drank with purpose. I didn't want to feel anymore. I didn't want to deal with life anymore. And I could have cared less if I died. And I can remember drinking, I don't even remember, it doesn't matter. But I remember drinking some hard stuff, and I was vomiting. And I went right back downstairs and poured myself some more because obviously the job wasn't done yet. And I woke up the next day feeling very miserable because I was still alive. And I continued on that path for another 10 years. And there was a lot of crazy times in all of that. There was a lot of really good times in all of that. It wasn't all horrible. My last year that I drank, though, was horrible. I had gotten to that point in my drinking where I could no longer control it, and I was absolutely trying to control it. I had gotten arrested, which I don't necessarily think is a qualifier to be an alcoholic, but that's just part of my story. And because of that arrest, it was for a DUI. I thought, well, I really need to get my act straightened out now because I'm messing up. I was in college at the time, working three jobs, and I couldn't not have a driver's license. And obviously there was something wrong here with the alcohol. And so I decided that to look good for the court system, that I was going to go to alcohol counseling. So I went to that counselor, and he gave me the old 20 questions or however many they are, and I thought I aced it. And he told me that I should consider Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, many years before I was 19, I had had some issues with other substances besides alcohol. I was evaluated by a drug and alcohol counselor who recommended that I go to AA. And I did go to a meeting in Trenton, and I walked in and felt scared to death. Which, you know, who doesn't? But I just wasn't ready. And I turned around. I didn't even go to the meeting. I turned around and walked back out. So when this guy says to me at 24 years old, you should consider Alcoholics Anonymous, I said, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm too young to be an alcoholic. And I just abuse alcohol. And I told him that I needed to learn how to become a non-abuser. I needed to learn how to control it. And that I liked to drink. And he says, well, of course you do. So he says, try AA. And I said, I'm not interested. I'm here. I'm going to do alcohol counseling here. And I went to this meeting like once a week with some other students from the university I was attending. And I managed to not consume alcohol for 90 days. And to celebrate my 90 days of sobriety, I went to the liquor store with at the time, man I was seeing or the guy I was engaged to, and we bought some alcohol and we celebrated. Like, I've got this thing. I was convinced I had this. And now we're approaching like the summer months and I wasn't going to be in class. And so I went on this hiatus where I think I was just in a blackout for many months in a row. I don't have a lot of recollection. There's a couple things I do remember, and some pretty horrible, horrible things happened. Like things that I see on TV or in the movies, and I can watch it feeling terrified, and I can relate to it because it happened to me. And all of it was because of this horrible hand of cards that I had been dealt. All of it was because of this horrible life that I had. I just couldn't get a break. And I just didn't know how I was going to keep on going. But alcohol was my security blanket. It was the one and only thing that I thought I had in my life that was going to give me some sense of relief from the insanity that I had to live in, that I was subjected to, you see. Because I was always the victim. Always, always the victim. I was the victim to my mother's decisions, to my stepfather's decisions, to school, to my boss, everybody. So when school started back up in September, I had quit drinking before, right? So I'm going to do it again. And it was going to be easy because I had done it before. And all the willpower I could muster up could not keep me from picking up a drink. And that was killing me inside. I can remember times when people would call me and, it's like a random Monday night or a Tuesday night. And I live 45 minutes away from these people. And, hey, we're going to go out and have a couple beers. And these are the kind of people that really do. And I was like, no, I have to study. I have obligations. And the moment I hung up that phone, that's all I thought about were my friends down at the bar. And I might miss something. I could just have one beer. What's the big deal? Or maybe I'll just go down and have a glass of water with my friends 45 minutes away when I should be studying. And then come home and just have some coffee and stay up late and study. And inevitably, the decision was made to go to the bar. And I would come home at 3, 4, sometimes 5 o'clock in the morning because alcohol led me to other things. And then once that craving kicked in, I was off to the races. You know, somebody might get a phone call for me. You know, I'm an hour away in Philadelphia and I can't get home or whatever. And it's, you know, people are on the phone like, Dana, it's Tuesday. And I'm like, what does that have to do with anything? Come pick my ass up. So anyway, that went on for a few more months. And, you know, I didn't have this big bad episode happen. I just had another bad run. And I woke up that morning and I had no idea. I mean, I woke up at my parents' home in my mother's bed. I had no idea how I got there. And another blackout. Didn't know where my car was. And my mom just had that same look of disgust that she had always had when I woke up in that kind of state. And she just shook her head at me and she's like, I'm done with you. And got in my car and I went home and I called that counselor back at the university and I said, I've been defeated by alcohol and I absolutely cannot keep on living this way anymore. And he said, are you ready to try AA? And I said, whatever. You could tell me to jump off a bridge right now and I'd do it if you could save me from the insanity in my brain right now. Because I didn't want to die. I didn't have the courage to take my own life. But I knew I didn't want to wake up anymore. Like, I just didn't want to live anymore. So he had recommended that I come back in and see him. And when I went back in and see him, he said, congratulations on hitting your bottom. The only place you have to go from here is up. And, you know, I see the wisdom in that today. At the time, I thought he was a little cracked, you know. But so he recommended that I hit some meetings. And I drove to a few meetings, and I sat in the parking lot, and I could never walk in. Just seeing everybody walk in and talk to each other and standing outside, you know, having a cigarette and laughing was just way too intimidating for me. There was absolutely no way that I could walk up to that. And eventually, after a month of non-consumption of alcohol, I made it to my first AA meeting. And then I started, I found a meeting actually on the campus of the university that I attended. And what I found there was a huge group of people that were my age, younger than me, that were out having an awesome time. And they were sober. And I thought, all right, I can hang out with this. I can see what this is about. And so I hung around in the rooms for, you know, a couple more months and then started branching out and going to some other meetings. And I heard this woman share one time at a meeting. She had just gotten back from a retreat. And she had the most awesome look in her eye, the most peaceful smile on her face. And the only thing I knew was that I wanted to feel exactly like that. And so I approached her, and I asked her if she'd sponsor me, and we immediately got into the steps. Immediately. Now, I tell you this now, I didn't see the value in it then, but I definitely see the value in that now. They put me right into the work, and I sat in a group. I met with a bunch of other young women like me, and we got together once a week, and we all sat on the Indian style on the floor, and we went through the big book together. I went on and did my steps, and I ended up, you know, and all this stuff, all this is happening, you know, my life is still a wreck, you know. You know, I left that man I was engaged to and I was living with and my home that was completely furnished. And the irony of that is I'm in that place right now, too. But anyway, I moved back in with my parents and living on the couch and no one's talking to me. They're kind of like, yeah, you're getting sober this time, whatever, you know. And I'm like, no, it's for real. But I can remember being in the middle of my first four step, and I called my sponsor, and I remember just telling her how sick I am of all of this crap. You know, like, why is it that I've had this life from hell, and I have to inventory my part? Like, what's that about? And, but I was truly frustrated. I was truly angry. I sincerely felt like I had been wronged for my whole life. And she was just, you know, she's another one of God's messengers, you know, telling me what I needed to hear at that time. Coincidentally, my mother came down the steps that day and said, "Hey, I'm going to go to Mass. Would you like to come?" Now, I was raised Catholic, and I thought, you know, why not? I need to get out of the house because I'm going insane from this stupid fourth step. And I hadn't had a spiritual experience at that time. And I had always had this concept of a God in my life. And I was in Catholic school, and I just had that fear, like, set into me. And maybe that's not even a fair way to say it. I was fearful of what I heard. What I heard and how I interpreted that, you know, how I perceived it, scared me. And so the God of my understanding, the one I made all those foxhole prayers to, he didn't have time for me. You know, I was a joke. You know, every time I made a promise, I fell short on it. I didn't follow through with what I said I was going to do. And every time I made a new promise, I meant it. I meant it. And I just couldn't follow through. And so God just kind of, you know, he's a busy guy. So I figured, all right, let's try this church thing. And this particular parish that I attended at the time had these priests that came in that were from, like, a missionary group. And what I really liked about them is they were these, like, world travelers, you know. They weren't, like, the resident priests. And not that there's anything wrong with that either. But these were guys that had been all over the world and working in, you know, poverty places and helping others, whatever. And so anyway, this guy gives this. I just had a lot of respect for him. And during the homily that day, it was around Easter time, and he had talked about how we all were coming into church and we saw this big cross on the back of the wall. And we all kneel and stand and sit, kneel, stand, sit, kneel, stand, sit. For those of you who are familiar with the Catholic traditions. And he said, "And what are you praying to? Who are you talking to?" And he said, "That is not God. God isn't here. Who you're talking to and who you're praying to is that power that's already within you that you were born with." And I sat there, 4 months sober, miserable from the fourth step, transformed because I had my first spiritual experience, and I got it. I felt like for the first time in my entire life that I had that power that was within me. It wasn't something that I had to look up to or pray a certain way to. It was my own personal understanding and experience with God. And so I just continued through the steps, and I stayed sober, and I eventually started getting my life together. You know, that kind of happens when you start doing the work and getting in the solution. And I graduated college after 9 years, and oh, whatever. So... So when I graduated, I'd always wanted to go to Ireland. I'm one of those Irish Catholic people and always wanted to go to Ireland. Never had a dime to my name because I always blew it on drugs and alcohol. And I was always sitting on a bar stool. You know, I just couldn't. I dreamt about it. Couldn't do it. So in a year and a half sober, my uncle out of nowhere, who had all these miles, funded this trip to Europe. I went for a month. I went with $500 cash for 3.5 weeks. I survived somehow. But I think one of the coolest parts of my trip is that I went to Stockholm first. And I went there because a friend of mine from high school had married a Swede and was living in the area. So, you know, and I'm new and gusto in AA, right? You know, I got all my literature with me, and I'm journaling every day. And it's kind of funny to read that stuff now. But so I land in Stockholm, and I tell my girlfriend I want to hit some AA meetings. And she found me some English-speaking meetings. Now, she had been there maybe 6 months, and I had hit three meetings in Stockholm, and it happened to be the same English-speaking meeting that I attended. So while I'm in this meeting, I'm telling these people that I'm on my way to Ireland. You know, it's what was my dream, to go to Ireland. And he says, oh, well, I have a friend who lives in Ireland. Here's her name and phone number. She's in the program. If you're in this town, look her up. Well, you know, I don't even know what town I'm landing in. So I take the card. I say thank you. And so we're leaving, and they're wishing, you know, giving me all the well wishes, and we're all hugging as we A's do, and super, super nice people. And my girlfriend's standing at the end of the block waiting for me, and she's watching all of this. And I approach her, and I'm like, hey, you know, how's it going? Where are we going for lunch? And she says, I can't believe it. I've been here 6 months. I don't know a soul. You've been here 1 week, and you're hugging people. And I said, it's AA. You know, I can go anywhere. Anywhere in this world, and I have a connection to people. I flew to Ireland, and my girlfriend met me, who was not sober. And I guess it was maybe within 24 hours, you know, I've got the big book out, I'm paging through how to deal with this, I'm calling my mom, and out falls the business card that I had slipped in from the guy in Sweden. Don't you know I'm in the town where he said this woman is? And I called her up that day, and she picked me up, and she took me to a meeting. So I went to meetings all over in Ireland. I then went to England to visit my aunt and met some people that didn't really care for Americans. But I apologize on behalf of all of us. So it's safe to go now. really awesome stuff. When I came home, I tried looking for a job, you know, because now I had arrived, right? You know, I got that degree. I was entitled to have a job, and couldn't find one. And back to waitressing I went. I used to be a bartender. I know that's shocking, but I decided to go to waitressing so it wouldn't be such a risky situation for me. I ended up getting another sponsor, started doing the step work again, got right into the big book again. Started going through my steps. I actually, at that time in my life, I started seeing a counselor again, and which actually was very helpful to me. I'm not an advocate, I'm not giving that message to anybody about what to do. It's just something that had worked for me at that time in my life. Well, several times of my life. But anyway, I ended up submitting a resume to this dream job, kind of putting it through the fax machine, thinking, They won't even look at me. And they called me right away. And it happened to be at an Ivy League university. And I thought, I'm not Ivy League material. You know, I'm a recovered alcoholic and drug addict. You know, I'm a train wreck, quite frankly. And I've got this degree. You know, I'm really not that smart. You know, I worked really hard for my grades. And actually, what I think is pretty funny about the whole sobriety thing and my grades is that when I got sober, I thought that it would be easy for me to study, you know, like all of a sudden I wasn't in this perpetual state of blackout and that studying would become easier. It didn't work like that. It was just as hard sober as it was drunk. But anyway, I get this call for this job. They're paying pennies, but I don't want to waitress anymore. And I ended up taking this job, and within a few months, like within 9 months, I got an awesome promotion. And turns out that if you are an employee of a university, of this particular university, you can go to school for free. And I thought, who knew that? So I apply. Because we still, you know, you still have to go through the same hoops that anybody else does. And I got in. Now, I tell you this not because it's an ego thing for me. It's not at all. It's actually sometimes I still pinch myself because I can't believe it. I tell you that because I was doing the steps, because I got sober, because I was living my life in the solution, miracles were happening. Miracles. When I walked into AA and I could have written down all of my dreams, I would have cut myself short because things started happening for me that I could have never imagined for myself. So I have this dream job. I move into Center City, Philadelphia. I am on top of the world. And it turns out that when you burn the candle at both ends, you start getting a little, things can happen. And one of the things that happened to me was I became very, very sick. And I came down with this syndrome that paralyzed me from my toes to my eyelids. And I was on life support. I was in a coma. They told my mother to go home and get my personal effects in order. They called the, I didn't think this would upset me. They called the priest in to give me my sacrament of the sick or your last rites because they were absolutely positive I wasn't going to make it through the night. This bizarre syndrome that I had affected my entire body except my brain. So all this time that I'm falling apart, that I'm in excruciating pain, because the paralysis has nothing, it was motor function only. It was very, very, very painful. You couldn't touch me. My liver's failing, my heart's failing, my one lung collapsed, and they were just doing everything they could in critical care to keep me alive. And I laid there in bed and I thought, how could God let this happen to me? You know, all those little cliche sayings, you know, that they say in AA, and God doesn't bring you this far to drop you on your head. And I'm thinking, you, I got dropped on my head. Because this is some bullshit right here. And then I have people in the program come to visit me, and they're petting my head, and they're like, are you working on your 11th step right now? And if I could have flipped in the bird, I would have. Because I really was fighting for my life. I was deathly, deathly afraid. And all I could think to myself was, is I could have cared less if I lived. I could have cared less. And here I was, a little over 3 years sober, and I was fighting to stay alive. I didn't want to die. I had so much to live for. My life was so awesome. And I was really upset with God. Like, honestly, very upset. Because I thought that all those 3 years of working that program and that spiritual experience I had, all that crap, where did that get me? I'm almost dead. They're telling me I'll never walk again. My paralysis was so bad that the neurologist had said that I'll probably never walk again. I was training for a triathlon when I got sick. I've been running competitively since I was 7 years old. And not that that should make it any harder for me than it would for anybody else who got that news. But I just was like, I'm such an active person. How could this, you know, and I'm sober. And I'm doing all these good deeds, you know. I think you get what I'm saying. So anyway, it turns out that I start to recover from, obviously, I didn't die. And, but I had a really bad resentment towards God. Like, it was deep. And I went into a rehab facility where they tried to teach me how to walk again and talk and brush my own teeth and go to the bathroom by myself. And it was an amazing experience. When I got home, my family says, what do you want to do when you get home? Do you want us to throw you a party? And I said, I want to go to a meeting. And I was really blessed. You know, because I lived in Philadelphia, I had friends coming to see me in the program from Philadelphia. When I was in rehab down there, I had friends from my local area coming to see me in the Burlington County area where I was in critical care. And I just couldn't get it, though. You know, I wasn't feeling it. I disconnected completely. And but I knew when I got out of that hospital that the only place that I had ever felt safe and secure and connected was at a meeting. So I went to a meeting when I got home and wasn't feeling it. And I knew that I needed to find this God thing again. And I wanted it back. Like, all I thought about was I want back what I had before. Like, it never occurred to me that maybe it's possible to have something even deeper. and more connected than I had before. You know, I'm so limited with my perception. Like, I think I know what's best. I think I know what the best situation would be for me. And so when I couldn't imagine that I could have that back before, I just shut down again. So I sought out some advice from others. My sponsor at the time said, why don't we try doing the steps again? And I was like, I don't think so. Like, I've had, like, if you shove the steps down my throat one more time, I'm going to vomit. And talked to a priest about this whole God thing. And then I met a boy. Talk about filling the hole in the soul. I met this boy who I ended up marrying. And the relationship was pretty unhealthy right from the start. He's an alcoholic. I didn't know that when I got involved with him because I was too busy not taking his inventory. That when all the red flags were coming up, I was like, nope, you know. Got into this marriage, immediately started to try to have children. And I tell this part of my story because I think that it's too quiet anymore, but I spent 4 years going through fertility treatments, and if there's anybody who's ever known anybody who's been through that and been through all those drugs and hormones, it's like PMS on crack. I lived like the first 90 days of sobriety for 4 years. I mean, no joke. Restraint of tongue and pen, get to a meeting. Restraint of tongue and pen, get to a meeting. You know, I had gotten a different sponsor. I had gotten this new home group. Just wasn't working. You know, I loved her, and at first I really loved the meeting. But, you know, when you're dying from untreated alcoholism, which is to the point where I had gotten all of this at this time in my sobriety, trying to have children, not able to, like, here it is again. You know, this hand of cards I've been dealt, you know. And then you go to a meeting, and they talk about how the neighbor blew leaves in his yard and he wanted to kill him. And that's what I listened to, you know, or the grandkids or my boss did this. I just didn't hear the solution. And unfortunately, that happens a lot in my area. A lot of the meetings in my area are just this therapy session, it seems. And, you know, it wasn't working for me. And I eventually did get pregnant. I was blessed in January of 2009 with twin daughters. They kick my rear end every day. About 6 months after I had the girls, I was at that point, that same point that I was when I came into AA, where I did not want to wake up and live my life anymore. And here I had the house and the husband and the job. I had the kids, the dog, you know, the whole, all of it. You know, I would look around myself. I'd look around my life and I'm like, there's nothing for me to feel miserable about. I have all these wonderful things in my life. And then I would beat myself up. You're 12 years sober. What the hell's wrong with you? And you need to get it together, and you need to make a gratitude list, and whatever. You know, I'd think of more ways to beat myself up, and I just got more and more depressed. So I woke up one day, or actually it wasn't even that I woke up. One night I'm in bed, and I jump out of bed, and I had a panic attack, which I'd never had before, and was having them chronically, like every half hour. I get hit with this wave of adrenaline. And I was just vomiting and calling my friends in the program at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. My husband tells me he wants a divorce. I'm unable to care for my children. And all I want to do is die. And I don't know why. So I go see a doctor. My sponsor came over and told me I needed to see a physician and get help. And I was diagnosed with postpartum depression. And I just, you know, I was hanging my head low. Like, all right, whatever. So I have postpartum. What do I need to do? So she prescribed me some medication for that. She prescribed me medication for my panic attacks. She told me I needed to start seeing a therapist. and I needed to start seeing a psychiatrist. And I was like, oh, I'm doing good. You know, and I see these other parents, you know, in the park pushing their kids around, and they're happy, and I want to die. I have these two beautiful little girls that I worked so hard for, and I want to die. So I go on the meds, and it helped me. You know, within 2 to 3 weeks, all of a sudden, like, this, I started to feel better. But I followed through with what the doctor had recommended, and I started seeing a therapist. I'm thinking I'm going to go into therapy and talk about why I have postpartum when I actually get into therapy, and I start talking about how I'm living in an alcoholic marriage. And so I stuck that out for a while. 6 months later, I ended up leaving that man and moved back in with my parents, where I am today. 40 with twins, living with my parents. It's what I've always aspired to do. It's all good. I'll bring that. I'll mention that later. So I continued in the counseling. I continued with the doctors and started to try to exercise again. Just couldn't figure out how I was going to live the rest of my life feeling the way I felt. And so I joined a new home group, a solution-based home group, where every speaker that was coming in was talking about the solution in the 12 steps, was talking about the transformation, spiritual awakening. And actually, one of your home group members came and spoke there last October. She talked about having a new experience with God and a new experience with the steps. And then if anybody was interested, just to come see her after the meeting. So after that meeting, I went up to this guy I know who has, you know, 20 years or something, and I'm like, how do you stand staying sober? And he says, how's your relationship with God? And I'm like, it's okay. And he's like, maybe not so hot. And I'm like, no, I'm thinking it's good. Because you see, I didn't realize that I had gotten so sick again. You know, I started going to Al-Anon and realized, like, how crazy I was getting in this alcoholic marriage. But I didn't think it was all me. I didn't think I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. I was going to meetings. I had a sponsor. You know, I was doing what they say to do. You know, and all the little cliche things. So anyway, this guy says to me, well, what did you think of the speaker tonight? And I said, I liked what she had to say. And he says, why don't you call her? And I thought to myself, I can't remember the last time I called somebody out of the blue in AA, but I didn't know. And so I found her number. I called this woman. She sat on the phone with me, and she started talking to me about the bedevilments. I couldn't tell you what the bedevilments were, but I actually pulled them up on my phone. Because I'm going to share them with you tonight, just in case you don't know. She says to me, are you having trouble with your personal relationships? Can you control your emotional natures? This really isn't funny, but it kind of is right at this moment. Are you prey to misery and depression? Can you make a living? Do you have a feeling of uselessness? Are you full of fear? Are you unhappy? Do you feel like you're of any real help to other people? And when I couldn't answer those questions, she said, I think you're suffering from untreated alcoholism. And I said, okay, what do I need to do? The first thing I did was I got off some of the medications that psychiatrist had put me on. I was on Klonopin for over a year, and so for my 14-year anniversary, I was detoxing for the first time ever. But I knew it was the right thing to do. You know, I called my doctor. I made sure he knew what I was doing. And then this woman recommended someone else that I could work with to take me through the steps again, to have a new experience with the steps and a new experience with God. And she introduced me to this wonderful woman who has so gracefully taken time out of her busy life with her children and family to work with me. And she's now my sponsor today. I'm still going through that divorce. I'm the single mom of 2.5-year-old twins that on any given day could really send me into orbit. They are... I can't believe I'm their mom. That I'm that privileged to have that responsibility in this lifetime. And that they've never seen me drunk and blacked out. I live with my parents. Not the easiest situation in the world. I am flat broke from paying for this divorce. Times are tough with the job situation. But because I have gotten back into the solution, I have truly been transformed. And I can't tell you the last time I've been this happy and this much at peace. And I'm not just saying that. I know everything is going to work out okay. I have been privileged enough to be in this program for the number of years that I have to know that everything works out somehow, some way. It does. And usually, always, when I'm out of the way, like when I'm truly staying connected to God, when I believe totally that He's got this, the things that happen are beyond what I thought I even wanted. Better. And not just for me, for everybody. I have had the privilege of working with other alcoholics today. Ever since I got back into doing these steps, boy, the miracles that have been happening are unbelievable. I still have 6 minutes, so I'll tell you this little story. I ran into this guy that I used to work with, and he's been sober a long time. Told me at one of our business meetings that he wanted to have a talk with me. He wanted to have lunch. So I say, sure, love to see you. I'm very excited to see this guy because I also know he's one of us. You know, it's not just going to be work stuff. It's going to be, fellowship stuff. And he proceeds to tell me at this lunch thing that, his wife had passed away. He had divorced her, but still, it's the mother of his children. He loved her very much. And his wife had passed away. And a month later, his son committed suicide because he couldn't get sober. And I sat there at that lunch table crying because I can't imagine what it must be like to have to live with that. And in some ways, I can imagine because I've been that depressed. I've lived my life in sobriety with untreated alcoholism that freaking depressed, not wanting to live, not in a solution. And it's always accessible to me. And I knew it was accessible to this man's son. And so we sat at lunch and we cried. He tells me that his daughter, this boy who had passed, twin sister, was just 3 months sober, having such a hard time, trying to stay sober. And he says, will you talk to her? I know you're doing the work again. I know you're into the steps. Will you talk to her? And I said, anything you want. So he gives me her email, and I send her an email in Florida, and I tell her that I had heard and that my heart was with them and some other sincere things, that I cared very much for her father, and if there was anything that I could help her do or any kind of guidance I could give her in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, anything. She can call me. With technology today, I don't have to sit in her living room with her. We can Skype. She wrote me back an email and told me that her father hasn't spoken in over a year. And because of his talk with me, he came out of his shell and he's back. And she thanked me. And I said, I did nothing except love another human being. I didn't think I did anything. And you know what? I didn't. God did. And it's because of being in the solution, it's because of being in the steps that the junk is leaving my head and he can come in or it can come in, the energy of the universe can come in and I can be available to other people. I can help other people and not even need to know that I'm doing it. That's the miracle of this program. I feel alive today. And I am a grateful, grateful alcoholic today. I can't say enough about this program, and I can't say enough about these steps. And if you haven't jumped in, don't waste any time. Get in there, get in the solution, and get transformed. It happens. And I think I'm out of time. Thanks.